Welcome back to FC Podcast. This is a nice little change of pace for us guys, because we've got a guest on. We've had one before, and a couple of people have asked, so we've got another one. And people are always saying to us, they were like, why don't you talk about clubs that either you're not interested in or you don't support? All right, I've listened to you. We've all listened to you, so we're doing just that. We're very happy to say we've got Luke Henry, who's from the Project Conversation podcast, which sounds like a brilliant podcast, joining us. What football team do you support, Luke?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on, mate. Unfortunately, I'm an Arsenal fan. Someone's got to be.
Well, that's something that none of us have ever had to painfully experience. I'm a Liverpool fan, so I've had it for years, and I'm kind of on the cusp of coming back from surviving. It's a good time to talk to you, to be honest, mate, because you've had the Derby victory,
yeah,
and then you've gone through against Olympiacos, and then you had something that we've all got quite used to, which was a really dodgy defensive situation at the weekend. I was driving down listening to the game. First of all, talk us through what happened against West Ham, because that was mad.
If you ever want 7 days or less than that to sum up your football club, this is it. A great dominant performance against your London rivals, your main rivals. You look so good. You're thinking, wow, what a performance that was. Fair, I know it was 2-1, but the performance, we absolutely dominated Spurs. They looked better in the last 10 minutes when they had 10 men than they did for the whole of the previous 80 minutes. You do that and you're thinking, right, you've won the derby, a little bit of bragging rights. The win was actually important, not because of us being Tottenham, but in the back of your mind, you're thinking, do you know what? That's put pressure on Spurs. You're in an outside chance of to get, you know, European football, not obviously top four, but top six, maybe top seven. You're thinking, okay, good. You know, bit of confidence. Thursday night. Okay, lads, we've been here before. Olympiacos, no repeats of last season. Yes, they need to score three, but stranger things have happened. And we come out and we play one of the most boring 45 minutes. And I could understand the tempo of that game because it was clearly game management. Don't let them score. But when they went to 1-0, mate, I'm watching this game and I'm thinking, oh, here we go. Here we go. And obviously we lost the game, but it was all forgotten about because of what Spurs did on Thursday night, losing to Zagreb. So you kind of brush it under the carpet. Then Sunday comes. And before you've even sat down and taken the game into perspective, you're 2-0 down to West Ham. And I'm thinking, what is going on with this team? The third goal, was calamitous to speak, from Louise and Mari trying to play offside when Suchek's clearly onside. But this is Arsenal season in a nutshell. We went from 30 minutes of not looking like a team or, you know, strangers. We didn't know, they didn't look like they knew what they were doing together, to coming out after going 3-0 down. And it's going to sound really stupid. That was some of the best football we've played in the season. And on another day, as bonkers as it sounds, we were kind of disappointed to come away from a point because we could have nicked it. But at the same time, we could have been 4-0 down at half time. Or if Antonio scores that chance, it makes it 4-2.
Yeah. That was a big swing of the game. It's like, that's one of those moments in football where you go, right, it's like, that's it now. It's going to be 3-3. It's like, there's been a big miss. It's destined to happen.
No, it's so weird, but it's kind of brilliant I've come up this time, because that just sums up Arsenal Football Club and Arsenal season so far. You know, for example, I know this form table keeps coming about since Christmas. Now, since Christmas, Arsenal would be third in the league. But, you know, the league started in September, and the fact that we're ninth because we've had a shocking start, well, pre-start to Christmas. And that's our downfall this season. And we've just been too inconsistent. We've been consistently inconsistent, put it that way.
Oh, it's the Brian Robson mentality. If we played like that every week, we wouldn't be so inconsistent, which is one of my favourite quotes ever from football. One of the quotes that kind of got me thinking at the weekend, and it wasn't the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thing of titles don't deem success or whatever, that was mental. But Kieran Tierney was saying that Arteta is a footballing genius. I know that he's won you the FA Cup, but is that something that you agree with?
Oh, it's a difficult one. I'd probably answer that question in terms of looking when we were going through that really, really difficult period. I remember when we drew to Southampton, then on the Saturday, we got beat by Everton. And there was a lot, and even I was an ardent... I hate this Arteta in or out, because no one wants Arteta out just for the sake of it's Mikel Arteta. If you want an opinion, the reason why they don't want the manager in is because the sensible fans don't think he's good enough to do the job. I just didn't think he had too much time. So whether you're Arteta in or out, it doesn't matter. You just want the best for your football club. But when we lost to Everton, I did think, I'm not sure he's got long left, because of you know, the way football works and the way the narrative works. And we were going into games where we felt as fans, we were not going to win and we were not going to score. And that's quite worrying when you're going into games and going 1-0 down at home to Burnley and going, well, that's the game done then, because you don't know where the goal is coming from. You don't know where the chance is coming from. But the interesting thing you always do is you always look at the players. You know, you could tell the body language when we had Unai Emery, and you could get that vibe from the players and the press conferences that they weren't fully behind the manager. But
well, they used to take the piss out of his accent, didn't they? That's exactly. Not really a good sign.
It's not a good sign. And, you know, they weren't bothered when he left. You take that outpouring of, we're going to back the manager, we play for the manager, similar to like Chelsea and Lampard. You kind of felt that the players were still playing under Lampard because it was Lampard. I might be wrong, but I remember Rob Holding coming out and going, it's the players, it's not us. We've got a really good manager. Luis is coming out and saying, give it 5 years, he'll be one of the best managers in the world. Leno's coming out and saying he's a great manager. Everyone's coming out and saying he's a great manager. So then you have to ask yourself, what's really going wrong? And I think it was just the fact that Arteta's tactics and his man management is probably better. It's a higher level than the players we've got, so to speak. And it's just taken a lot of time for that to be drilled in and drilled in. And you see certain games and it comes off really nicely. I'll give you an example, the Burnley game. Played really good football in that Burnley game. I'll give you another example, the Wolves game. For 45 minutes against Wolves, we were sensational. And I'm not putting that lightly. Were we brilliant? We were a joy to watch. We lost to Wolves and we drew to Burnley. And that's the problem. If Arteta had a better group of players, more players, because Gabriel and Partey of his own signings have worked, apart from Willian, that hasn't worked. He needs more time. But you can slowly see there is some sort of progression. There is some sort of, I don't know, vision to the way we play. I look at Spurs, for example, and I'm not just digging them out because they're Spurs, but as a Spurs fan, you must be watching these games going, I don't know what the actual final product is going to look like, because it just seems to be defending the game out after 1-0. And I know Spurs fans don't like that when they've got the abundance of talent of Kane, Song and Ndombele and stuff like that. I look at our team and it's going to sound really stupid. That West Ham 3-3 draw was weirdly entertaining because of the style of football we played.
It's been a long time since you can say that you have been entertained. I was like, one thing that I remember growing up, I used to, even though I'm a Liverpool fan, I used to love watching Arsenal play.
Yeah.
One, for the quality of players, two, for the way you played.
Exactly.
Like, and Arteta, sensational.
And this is the thing, Arteta's played in those teams that, yes, didn't win trophies, but we still played lovely football. He had the likes of Podolski, Carzola, Ramsey, Ozil, Sanchez, Giroud. So forget being a manager, for example. He knows what it takes to play lovely football. So surely you just naturally think he was going to make that time. He wasn't going to be this manager where it was like, right, we're going to be completely and utterly defensive. We're going to be hard to break down and we're not going to go for it. It was such a big job when he took the job on. And the first thing he thought that was really, really worrying was the defense. And fair play to him, he ironed out the defense. And at one point this season, we had the best defensive record in the league. Now, that might mean nothing to you, but as an Arsenal fan, it was unbelievable. To have the best defensive record in the league was crazy. And then it went to level to Manchester City. I'm thinking, yeah, all right, we're not scoring, but we're not conceding. And this was the problem, because I think when we went through that really bad run, the only game we lost to where we were heavily beaten was Aston Villa when they chucked us 3-0. The rest was one goal games, 2-1s. And I'm not defending the performances, but it was one of them, iron out their mistakes and you'll be hard to kind of awkward to beat. And you've kind of seen that, bar the City game, and it looked like the West Ham game, but bar the City game in early February, it's going to sound stupid, we haven't actually been well beaten apart from the City game.
See, this is the thing that, you know, in this conversation, you've got a Bayern Munich fan who's so used to watching teams is outscoring every team that they play. However, yeah, exactly. But you've got a Chelsea fan here whose main title defences were won on their defence. And you've got a Liverpool fan who, yeah, we blew teams away, but not many people scored against us. Titles do win you defences. So it is a good place philosophically on and off the pitch to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I agree. And it is weird because, and that's why I think the run was even more frustrating, because we actually went to Old Trafford and we won 1-0. And yeah, the performance from Arsenal wasn't as great as people make out to be. It was solid. It was comfortable. But Man United didn't really lay a glove on us. And it was actually a really poor Manchester United display. You know, if we hadn't got the penalty, it would have been 0-0. But it was the magnitude. It was the subplot. You know, there was the first win in under 20 in 29 games against the Big Six. You know, Mikel's come in and ended that hoodoo. Hadn't won a game against the Big Six since 2015 against City. You put all of that aside, you're thinking, that is massive. That is my, but, you know, go and take that into the next few weeks. We came in, we lost to Villa, and we're thinking, that's a heavy defeat. But don't worry, Arteta will go. And then it just went from bad to worse. And then you're thinking the situations he had to deal with off the field. This is me not defending him. This is just putting everything into context of what was happening at the time. You know, the Ozil situation, the Saliba talk, you know, injuries, you know, Thomas Partey, for example, was injured. You know, Granit Xhaka's playing with Mohamed Elneny. We've got no creativity. We're trying to deploy Lacazette as a number 10. We've got our captain and goalscorer, which is not really hitting form. And then you've got the Europa League team. And then this is when people think football's FIFA, because you've got Arsenal fans saying, yeah, but look at us in the Europa League. Well, hold on. We're playing Dundalk, we're playing Mulder, and we're playing Rapid Vienna. At the best of times, we're going to score goals and we're going to look good. I'll just chuck the kids in. No, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. So there's you've always got a degree in understanding and a degree of context. Now, we're ninth in the table. That is where we deserve to be. We deserve to be ninth. We are the ninth best team in the league. Arguably, yeah, I agree with that. I think, yeah, when you look at the table this season, we haven't been better than any of them. I think Arsenal and Villa have been neck and neck. Villa, Leeds have obviously dropped off, but Leeds have played well this season. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. Someone asked me if we could get European football. And I said to them, would you ask a Leeds fan the same question? Because for the large part of the season, it's been Arsenal going to 10th, then Leeds going above us with the game in hand, then Arsenal replacing them. We've been more and more having a competition with Leeds and Villa for the 9th, 10th, 11th, rather than putting significant pressure on the Evertons, the West Hams, and I dare to say it, Chelsea's. So we deserve to be where we are. But I said, when I knew the league was finished, I said, look, we just need direction. We need a bit of progress and a bit of vision. And I'm seeing those three things. I'm not stupid enough to go, this isn't going to be an overnight thing. This will take time. And it goes far, far deeper when a club, sorry, of Arsenal's magnitude has stood still for 5 seasons. Ever since Leicester won the league, that team has stood still from the top down to the bottom. And sooner rather than later, it was going to filtrate to the pitch. And you know what? We're paying the price for it. Everyone gives Chelsea criticism for sacking their managers constantly. But hey, Abramovich is such a good owner because he puts money straight into that club and he gets trophies. Ask any Arsenal fan in the world, what would you rather? An owner like Abramovich and the culture that Chelsea have built, or would you rather the last 40 years of Arsenal's history? You'll get a split. You'll get more Arsenal fans wanting Chelsea because we just want trophies. Yes, we've had leagues and we've had FA Cups, but ask me, are Arsenal going to win the league in 5 years? You can't say definitely yes. But you could say to a Chelsea fan, they've got a very good chance of winning the league in the next 5 years. Why? Because Abramovich will want to win it in the next 18 months. And that's the mentality and the culture that Arteta is trying to build. But that's only going to take time.
Now, see, this is you've touched on a really interesting topic here, which is something that I've talked to Jack about before. Now, Jack, a lot of Chelsea fans always go, we want to see attacking football, we want to see really good football. But there's also the caveat of all those trophies that do filter through the club. Like you're constantly reminded me that Chelsea are the most successful club in like the past 10 years from the English league. See, it just came straight to my brain. It's been drummed in. But
it's a very good stat.
It depends who's saying it. And but what I would say is, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a team that, like Lampard was going to do, hit the reset button, rebuild philosophy, build the club up, or inconsistency of philosophy, dare I say it, footballing culture and identity, but you win trophies? Is the identity more important or the identity of being winners?
I mean, I've always wanted stability. That's the main thing I've been crying out for the last 10 years. I mean, I suppose we have sacrificed stability for success, but there comes a point where we do need a bit of an identity to us. We do need some stability. And I think that's why everyone was so sad about Lampard getting the sack, because there was that false hope when we got him that we have to restart now. We've just lost our best player. We've got a transfer ban. We've got all these players in the academy. The owner is forced now to make a restart, and this is what we're going to do. And then 18 months later, we've gone back to our usual, and it's been a success. Don't get me wrong. Thomas Tuchel's been a success so far, but you can't help but feel 2-3 years time, we go again.
It's a difficult place to find yourself, really. It's like with my own club, I've seen massive periods of flux. But for me, one of the things that's kind of, I look back on Arsenal now over the past 5 years, and the name that kind of sticks out to me is Mislintat, the head of scout at Dortmund that you then brought in. I can't say, I'll be honest, since he's left, a lot of his signings have worked out. I was reading an article today in The Athletic regarding him, and he was saying he was brought in to learn under Arsene Wenger, then Wenger left, then Gazidis went to Milan, and he was out the door. He says, I didn't really get much chance to imprint my ideologies on that squad. But I think the way that you've played over the last few years is a very telling sign of how the club in itself is being run at the minute. Do you see any of that changing moving forward? Do you think, you know, now that you've got a sporting director and you seem to have a bit of infrastructure within the club, do you think that moving forward is going to put you in a positive step or maybe a step backwards?
Yeah, there's been a lot that has gone on upstairs at Arsenal. It's been like a running soap opera out there from time, because I think since Wenger left, I think we've had 14, I might be wrong, 12 or 14 figurehead changes upstairs, and the people have come exactly. So you're talking about stability on the pitch, but so many people who don't really do a lot are up there, just being up there and not doing anything. They're causing, it's too much. So now what Arsenal have decided to do is they finally just brought in a new sort of streamlining process. And now it basically has Vinay Veshkaterian, who basically is now, he's basically like our chief football person. I wouldn't say he's not like an Ed Woodward, but he oversees everything football. But then we brought someone in called Richard Garlick, and now we brought another guy in called Tim Lewis. Now Tim Lewis's first thing he actually did, I think he came in 2019. His first thing he did, which is a bit ballsy if you ask me, was to open up an investigation on the Nicolas Pepe transfer, because he felt that Arsenal had overpaid for £72 million. So that kind of shows, for me, that shows like a positive, because we're starting to go, hang on a minute, what's going on upstairs? Why are these deals happening? And now you've got Arteta and Edu that are taking full control over the transfers. And they're like a two-man team. Like, for example, the Gabriel and Partey deals, they both conducted them together. They were both there at the time. I think they both had the negotiations. And I think the key thing is with the negotiations now, Arteta has called them. He spoke to them directly. You see many managers, I think, that just let the other people deal with it. They wait for the call. They wait for the training ground. But Arteta is really in that. And you can see, because it's not a coincidence that he's managed to convince Gabriel to join us over the likes of PSG, Manchester United. I know Thomas Partey had no other suitors, but why would you leave Atletico Madrid to come to a team that's mid-table in North London? Because of the pull of Arteta.
I can think of one main reason.
What?
No, it wasn't that, mate. Mate, his wages like doubled. It was the main reason why he left Atletico. He went for a better lifestyle, mate. The wages were like double. He wasn't going to get the wages at Atletico.
Yeah, but then you've got to ask yourself, what's more important? What's more important in football? Is it the wages?
Clearly to him, he's chosen wages, hasn't he? And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, the main reason he's gone there is the money. And the lifestyle. He's going to be living in London. Okay, he was already living in Madrid. Tremendous city. But he's going to be living in London with a lot more money.
Yeah, okay. So money and the fact that he's an Arsenal fan. But let's be honest, if he wasn't an Arsenal fan, then yeah, we'd have to give him 260 grand a week wages is what he've got. What I'm saying is that Thomas Partey, you know, he could have gone to any team he not really wants to, but if he's playing Atletico, you know, he could have gone to many more teams, especially with a £45 million release clause. You know,
not many other teams came in for him, though. The only
that's what I'm saying. That's my point. That's my point. We were the only team that was in for him. But if more teams were in for him, I don't think Thomas Partey would have been an Arsenal player. That's my point. Because it's a lucky that he was an Arsenal fan and he grew up supporting Arsenal. And that's, you have to be honest with that, because we're not an attractive proposition. We can't go and get the best players. We can't. We really can't. It's not an attractive project. And the factor is, if we would have had an Unai Emery in and trying to get Thomas Partey, I don't think it would have worked, because Arteta, forget what people think of him, he convinces players to come because of the vision. And it's that forward-thinking mentality. Yeah, there's been memes and jokes about him wanting to win the Champions League in 3 years. But at the end of the day, if you don't aspire to be the best, how are you going to even come and be close to being the top four? We have to change the culture. You have to change the mentality of the club. And I'm interested to see what you said about stability and how you wanted stability. Isn't stability based on winning trophies? Because every other season, same with Liverpool, you look at Klopp, you know, they gave Klopp three years.
You look at our past couple of managers, there was no stability whatsoever.
You won things. You've won, Conte won you a league and an FA Cup and left.
Yeah. You know?
And then Sarri comes in and we thought we were going to get stability under Conte.
And in the second half of the second season was just an absolute shit show. Actually, the whole second season, really.
So let me ask you this. What would you rather? No trophy for 5 years or one manager for 5 years?
Well, you've got to go trophies, haven't you? That's what I'm saying. We've sacrificed stability, but a lot of Chelsea fans are just desperate for a bit of a balance.
But so Chelsea fans are still desperate in this current climate, the fact that you nearly win a trophy, you know, every other season, if not every season, you win something every other season.
Yeah, but I think this idea of us pulling trophies out of the bag, even though we're continuously changing managers, I think that's starting to catch up with us now, because we're just getting further and further away from City and Liverpool.
One of the things that I just think about when Jack says that, sorry to interrupt you, is like, you look at Arteta now, he's going to spend the next 2 years getting his players through the door so that his starting 11 is his starting 11. Liverpool, the same. Klopp came in, Michael Edwards came in, they've built that team together. Look at Chelsea, there's about four or five different managers' players there. And I don't know whether, because like you look at like Marcus Alonso, I don't know who he was signed by.
Conte,
wasn't it?
Yeah, so that's what I mean, is like there's so many different players, so many different playing styles, so many different philosophies in that squad. And you look at last season with people falling out and animosity and stuff, that's kind of what that can sometimes harbour, which you've seen at Arsenal the last couple of seasons. So it is an interesting crossroads that Arsenal find themselves at now, because you look at how Spurs are, they are now coming towards an end of a cycle. That's another team that's going to drop out of the top places, especially Kane leaves.
Big time.
There's an opportunity here for Arsenal to use the time that Spurs are falling to stabilise yourself and be on the rise by the time they sort their shit out.
And that's the risk you take.
I think you might look back on this season as a season that laid the foundations for what is to come.
Especially with no Europe next year, because you could really, really make a crack at that top six.
So you've had the new signings adapt to the Premier League. You've had the young players come through and gain experience in Saka and Emil Smith Rowe. And you've had that January window where, okay, you brought in Odegaard on loan and he's been a great success so far. But for me, the best thing that you did in that January window was get players out the door. You got Ozil out the door. You got the wages off the bill. You got Mustafi out the door, wages off the bill. And you got Kolasinac out the door. Again, big wages off the bill. You got three players that the club felt were doing, I wouldn't say maybe more damage, but high wages, weren't producing enough for the squad, and they're out the door, and it's going to help you so much more in the summer now. I think you're going to look back and you might find that this season was the one where you were propelled from.
Was being asked. James, have you got any questions? You've sat ominously in the corner.
Yeah, I've just been interested kind of listening to everyone's point of views. Unfortunately, when it comes to Arsenal, I don't know too much about Arsenal.
No.
I know a lot about Bayern Munich.
Bayern Munich games. He just wants to bring on the Bayern Munich Arsenal games. That's what he wants to do.
He'll do anything to turn it around
to Bayern Munich.
No. I'm not going to say that at all. I think it was just kind of like for me with Arsenal, it seems that before the move to the Emirates, you were a big, big club, like massive. And since the move to the Emirates, it's almost been as if you haven't been able to get to those same highs, so to speak. And to be fair, it's kind of with Tottenham moving to a new stadium also, it's a bit like an idea of a fresh start. But I guess kind of when it comes to Arsenal, I mean, you have won trophies. It's not like you haven't won any trophies. But I think it's maybe just trying to get to those levels of that Man City, Chelsea, and potentially even recently Liverpool. What would you say is missing to get to those levels?
Have we got an hour? I was there, by the way, at the Emirates when you Bayern Munich came and beat us 5-1 to make it 10.
Oh, Luke, don't bring it back to them.
I was there as well. I was there in the stadium as well.
But I mean, and
what he was after.
Well, no, Jack, because you know what? It ties in perfectly with what James said. Because, look, I get your point, but I think this is the Arsenal fan that came in me. We moved to the Emirates, obviously, in 2006, and that season we got to a Champions League final. You know, you can write whatever happened in that Champions League final we lost. Heartbroken. I know it's viewed as a small trophy, or the less of a, but 2007, we found ourselves in a Europa League Cup final. Obviously, you know, I guess we lost. 2008, we should have won the league. I personally feel we should have won the league. The only reason I say we should have won the league is because I think we lost three games all season and didn't lose a single game at the Emirates. And obviously it was the season when Eduardo broke his leg. But, you know, credit to Man United. They finished 4 points clear and we finished third. Obviously, Chelsea finished second with 85 points. But seasons like that just make show how good they were, how good teams were then, how good the English clubs were then. And then it was constant Champions League quarterfinals. You know, we were knocking on the door again for me. I think it was 2013 under Arteta. We actually, you know, as a player, you might remember this. I am, was it 5-1 you beat us, Liverpool? And we were top of the league in February.
When we were like 4-0 up.
4-0 up.
After like 20 minutes. I remember this is how long ago it was, because I've quit smoking since then, but I used to smoke back then. And I remember the first goal going in and I went out on my balcony and I lit my cigarette. And when I turned around, the second one went in and I was like, oh, boys. And I ran into the kitchen to grab the other lads. And by the time I came back, the third one went in and I was just like, what is this? Like the complete guys, one of my favorite games of football. Which is also one of the ones that is a bit of a kicker because it's what essentially cost us the league was drawing against your lot 4-4. That Arshavin game he just went off on one. But I always see that game as the one that lost us the league when we lost to United by however many points. I think it was also 4 points, the bastards. But it's
I remember that game, but I thought my phone had broke because obviously Skrtel, I think, scored two, didn't he? And I was like, nah, my phone's broke. I don't think that's
right. Top scoring centre back in Europe that season, mate.
I know. I couldn't believe it. But so, yeah, we were top of the league in February then. So it was frustrating because we were my point of that is we were there. From 2011 onwards, that's when it went completely like that. And then Arsenal had that famous, you know, week in March or week in February where you'd be out of the FA Cup, you'd be out of the Champions League and you'd lose the big game on the Sunday in the Premier League. And then you'd find yourself 12 points adrift at the top, playing for top four again. Mm. That's that for that 3 years from 2011. And it came in the time when Gazidis said, we're a superpower now, we're going to challenge the best. And hence why I brought up the Bayern Munich story, because we're challenging with the best and we lost 10-2 in aggregate. So from 2011, I think Arsenal fans changed their perception and were like, right, we've given Wenger enough time. We've given them 5 years. And to be fair, they've done quite well with what, because we were getting close. We were feeling like we could have won the league.
Knocking on the door. You can see, you can see that you're nearly there.
But 2011 is when it all went a little bit wrong. And it was kind of like the belief and the culture was changing. And we were kind of just making up the numbers. I think the eye-opening
moment. That's when players started to leave as well, wasn't it?
Well, we were always a selling club. Even in 2009, we players like Adebayor was having one good season and leaving. Then we were having contract issues. And then this is when Arsenal became a little bit of a, it was a lovely club for teams like you, because you knew, and this is what I don't like, Chelsea, United, Liverpool, they all knew that when push came to shove, Arsenal wouldn't be there. Arsenal would always fall at the final hurdle. And then they'd have a summer of uncertainty with their best player. Are they going to lose a Nasri? Are they going to lose a Fabregas? Arsenal were never going to go, right, we've got six great players in, let's add two. It was always, right, let's see if they stay, and then we'll have to buy someone for £15 million cheaper to try and make them a world club. Like, we bought Santi Cazorla, and he was I knew good things about him, but it was great for us. But do you know what I mean? But we were buying Arshavins for 15 minutes, who had a great Euros, but we were never adding. We were always replacing these with great players. Mm. We never had a world, we had a great team, but my point was we never build it. We were always waiting for them to leave, and then we were replacing them. So it was never really, you talk about stability then, it wasn't really a stable cycle.
No. And then, deadline day where you got, after Cesc left, where you got Arteta, Mertesacker, and
Andre Santos.
Yeah. That's it, on deadline day. You got a goalkeeper, the Italian goalkeeper as well, wasn't
Viviano.
It? That's it.
And you kind of feel that, and you were thinking, what's going on? And I think that was 2011. I believe that was the summer we lost 8-2 to Manchester United.
It was.
And you saw the
deadline day as well.
And you saw the, no disrespect, but you saw the players we had on the pitch then. We had a mismatch. We had Jenkinson, we had Giroud.
Traore, left back. Yeah,
Ben Ayoun in midfield. So you were kind of looking around going, what is going on here? Do you know? And that's when I think Arsenal fans were going, what is going on with the club? And then I wouldn't say people started asking Wenger to go, but 2014, he won the FA Cup. I think a lot of Arsenal fans went, right, he can go now. And then especially the day he didn't bring back Fabregas. That was when everyone was like, oh my God, what's he doing? Because he said he had Mesut Ozil. But I think people were a bit confused considering he had a team of invincibles who were so good and he had competition for places in that team, but he wouldn't welcome back Fabregas to have a midfielder. Fabregas
become a player that played deeper as well than the number 10 he originally played at Arsenal.
Well, then he went to go and Chelsea, you know, spearheaded them to a league with Hazard and Costa. So it was awful. And then we papered over the cracks by winning another FA Cup in 2015. And then it was weird because we signed Sanchez and we signed Ozil and we looked at the team and thought, okay, the bigger teams are having a decline here. You know, this is a great chance to go and win a league. He brings Cech in, no outfield player, just brings Cech. We're like, what? You can't get your head around it. And then the reason why is because the belief and the culture and the mentality was top four, top four, top four. It was never win a league, win a league, win a league. And, you know, I'm a fan and I could say this and you can believe me or whatever and you or not. But when Cesc Fabregas is doing interviews and he's telling that Arsene Wenger became more concerned with playing the beautiful game and scoring a beautiful goal rather than winning a league and winning trophies, that tells you everything you need to know about the manager that came in.
That says a lot, doesn't it?
That's the same manager that came in and dominated with Alex Ferguson in English football. It's the same manager. As we changed from the Emirates, he changed. And for me, I'm 22. So it's difficult for me because I've always grown up with Arsene Wenger and we've had this chat many a times, Jack, on the train. Jack's mentality would be thinking, we might get a new manager. You ask me as an Arsenal fan that 5 years ago about getting a new manager, it's crazy. Honestly, I couldn't tell you how weird it is to go, are we getting a new manager? Like, honestly, it's bizarre. The day he left, oh my God, it was the weirdest day. It was the strangest day. I thought football had finished. I was like, what are we going to do?
Like, football, as you know, it had changed. Like, it was never going to be the same.
Yeah, it's still not the same. But I think that's the problem. It was the overstaying, the over-loyalty, being comfortable, the decline. And he's transgressed into Unai Emery. And then now Mikel's got a massive job to do. So that's why I always think it's time with Arsenal. But it's such a catch-22 because there is no time in football, as Lampard found out.
Nothing is guaranteed anymore. Success is just not guaranteed.
And this is where you have to just be ruthless and be honest. What do you want? Because Arteta could get sacked by the end of the season. He can go and bring in another manager. And it depends what manager you bring in. I know everyone talks about an Allegri or a Simeone or, you know, a world-class manager. First thing they're going to ask for is £300 million.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
They're going to ask for money and they're going to ask for a 3-year contract because they need time to do it. So what do you do?
Three years is a long, long time in football.
But is it though? When you've got a bigger project, look at Liverpool. You know, Liverpool were always a big team, always a massive team. You know, you can have that argument with United fans.
Ask Andre Vorenin whether we're a big team.
Oh.
I was just saying, I remember a time when we were a big team. This is something that I've kind of wanted to talk to an Arsenal fan about, and I'm really glad we've got you, Luke, for this question only. I grew up supporting a team that used to be the biggest club in the world, used to be at the top of the league, used to be in challenging for trophies, and winning a trophy was I remember when we won the League Cup against Cardiff, and me thinking, right, that's it now, we might win a few trophies. And it was a long, long time before we did. So that when we were in that final in Madrid, I needed that. And then when it didn't happen, I genuinely was like, I don't know when we're going to next win a trophy. I was like, because Klopp at the time had this.
You lost it in Madrid.
But that's what I mean. Sorry, against Madrid, won it in Madrid. If we'd been playing Ajax rather than Spurs,
could have been a different story.
Completely different game. Yeah. And a lot of our success stems from beating Spurs in Madrid. If we hadn't have done that, I don't think we would have won the league last year.
I think I could speak for Luke as well when I say, what a fucking night. What a night that was.
But one of the reasons as to why I bring that up, Luke, is I don't have a lot of memories of my team winning a hell of a lot or being at the top of the statistics for goals or playing the best football.
You always have Istanbul.
Yeah, we'll always have Istanbul, but it's one night, and one night is a long time to stem your entire childhood of football. And you being now 22, Lou, I wonder, as I now hurtle scarily fast towards my 30s, I say, I wonder if in 10 years' time, you'll have had very much similar to the previous 10 years, or you'll have a little bit more closer to what you had when you were in the Invincibles. Can I ask you, which one do you think's more likely?
If I'm being honest, I do think we'll get back into the top four in the next. I don't think next season. I generally think next season's still too tough. I'm not sure.
It's a lot harder now to get in the top four. There's a lot more teams.
It's a top six now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the season after, two seasons now, I think we could be going for the top four. Should is a different to context. And then it's really take your pick. Because the funny thing is, we could win the Europa League this season. After everything we've talked about, we can win a Europa League. And then you look at Arteta's record. Yeah, all right, he got knocked out by Olympiacos in the round of 60, it's round 32 last season. It's a final. It's an FA Cup final. He's won an FA Cup and he's won a Europa League. He's been in the club two and a half years.
I think if you finish 10th and win Europa League, that's a successful season.
Yeah, because it's top four. It's in the Champions League. So
exactly.
I don't know what Arsenal fans really sometimes want. And, if he does that, it's great. And then we're in the Champions League, but then it's a big if, because if we get into the Champions League, I don't want to make up the numbers again. I'm sick and tired of being, I'm sick and tired of being in a competition where we're out of February. There's no point being in it, absolutely no point. Mm. And that's when the owners need
foregone conclusion. Yeah.
That's when the owners need to take up, a look at themselves. I remember when I remember in, I think it was 2015, where we avoided... We finished top of our group. And no, there was one season where we finished top of our group and Bayern Munich finished second and we got Bayern Munich. And then the season after, we avoided both Bayern and Barcelona and got Monaco. Now, the Arsenal fans' reaction when we got Monaco was we couldn't believe it. We were celebrating before the game had even kicked off. And that transmitted to the players and we lost 3-1 at home, went away 1-2-0 and went out on away goals. I could not believe what had just happened, because we had a quarterfinal place right up for grabs and we blew it. And that was, for me, I was there that night and I still remember Martial giving Bellerin an absolutely torrid time. And Berbatov.
Probably what got him in his move.
Berbatov and Kresko pulling the strings that game. But my point is about that is, that's when I was like, we're playing, no disrespect to Monaco, we should be beating Monaco if we want to do well in the Champions League. And it's quite weird because we're in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. We've been in the semi-final of the Europa League. All right, we've been in a final. We won't talk about the final. But we get into the latter ends of the Europa League and we can't win it, which begs me the question, if we can't win the Europa League and we can't score two goals against Atletico Madrid, who had 10 men for 80 minutes, do we really deserve to be in the Champions League? Are we really good enough to be in the Champions League? And, the blunt answer is we're not. At this moment in time, we're not. We're not. We couldn't do what Chelsea's doing now. We couldn't, and it pains me to say that. There's no way we'd have a performance like that against Atletico Madrid over two legs. I'd want us to. Oh, yeah. But there's too many mistakes. There's too many self-inflicted mistakes. And the thing is with Arsenal, we play too much in moments. We look good for 15, 20 minutes. We look great. But then we look at, and then for then another 15 minutes, we look like we could honestly concede at any single moment. And this is, it goes back down to trust as well, And people can say what they want about David Luiz and how good he's been. Okay this season, David Luiz should never be a first choice in my eyes, but it's David Luiz. He always has that mistake in him. Something's going to happen.
But he can also be one of the best defenders on his day. He's just indestructible.
And this is my problem.
You pay him for those days, don't you? With hope.
Yeah, he played very well against Spurs, but then against West Ham, I'm questioning things he's doing.
It's Luiz in a nutshell. Picks and chooses when he wants to play.
Well, and you know what? We've had that for many players for too long. And that's, again, goes back to the culture of Arsenal about this comfortable nature where, I'll give you an example quickly because I've been rambling on. the Aubameyang incident in the North London derby, brilliant from Arteta. Brilliant.
Stuck by his guns. And if there's one game that you kind of maybe let a player turning up late slide, it's the game it's against the Spurs. Nope. Stuck with it.
Fantastic management. And the reason why people have criticised Arteta is because we've now become accustomed and brainwashed into normal, comfortable environment. That was brilliant management. Forget the fact we won the game, because I would have said the same, even if we had drawn the game or lost the game. Arteta has set out non-negotiables since the day he came. If you don't buy them, you're not playing at Arsenal Football Club. Ozil found that out the hard way, you know. And if you're not good enough, you're also not playing. Fair play to Socrates, model professional, wasn't even a sniff. Not even a sniff. Gone. Mustafi, gone. Kolasinac, gone. Torreira, where we thought was actually quite a decent midfielder, not for me, gone. Guendouzi, attitude stinks, gone. Maitland-Niles, his attitude's poor, gone. Aubameyang, late for training, late for the game, my club captain, on the bench. You learn the hard way.
He won't be there in the summer.
Who, Aubameyang?
He won't want to stick that out. Yeah, but he'll be like,
how are you going to sell him? Like, he's going to take up the wages.
Well, that's the thing though, is you look at some of the clubs that are out there, and if Aubameyang goes, I'm available, they'll be able to get him on a lower fee because of the part of placing his contract and his age, and that'll make up the wages. He's a Juve signing if I've ever seen one.
Sure. I don't think that's a player Juve need to go forward.
No.
I think Lacazette would be more suited to Juve, but I'm not even sure what's going to happen with Lacazette.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is the thing, is like, as an American football fan, I see the Arsenal's owned, the guy who owns Arsenal also owns the LA Rams. I don't know if you've seen their new stadium, the SoFi Stadium.
I haven't.
$1 billion it's cost. And also the LA Rams are the team that spend the most players, supposed to spend the most money on player contracts in the States. They've just signed one of their star players to a $35 million a year deal.
Nice. And same owner, the Denver Nuggets in basketball as well.
Yeah, same owner that didn't put a single penny in the club for 5 years consecutively at one point. And then Arsenal.
Yeah, it's because he's taking it out and building a stadium with it.
And then, and then this is the thing. We get told by the media, and rightly so, that Stan Kroenke put in a major cash boost for Thomas Partey. The thing is, we don't know what that was, because a major cash boost to him literally could be a fiver, because it's bringing cash in. It could be so cheap. Yeah. We don't know what it is. It might have been the full £25 million. And if it was, brilliant. Thank you very much. But where's that been for a decade now? You know, and this is the thing. Yeah. Look at Frank Lampard. No disrespect to Frank Lampard, but Abramovich gave him money. I mean, and I always just wonder, if Arteta had a £250 million war chest or a £200 million war chest, who he would have got in? And I just would have been interested to see it. And if you ask me that question, I'm not sure if I'm ever going to see it. Because, and this is, this is kind of a weird thing to say. We win the Europa League. That's success. They've won a trophy. What needs to change? That's the way the board would think.
Oh, that's it. Do you know what, mate? I'm just looking at his time. You've given me a lot to think about that I've not thought about Arsenal. I'll be honest, it's not very often I have a very logistical conversation with an Arsenal fan, but you've broke the mold for me most definitely, mate. Can't thank you enough for coming on, mate. Really, really enjoyed having you on, and love to have you on again. Just before you go, though, what's the name of the podcast that you're doing? And this is your opportunity to plug it away.
Yeah, so. Thank you. But before, sorry to ramble on, but once you mentioned Arsenal...
No, don't. I've loved the chat, honestly. Really
Arsenal Football Club is the bane of your life. My podcast is called Project Conversation. It's nothing to do with Arsenal Football Club, because they drive me around the wall at the best of times. And it's literally the podcast that keeps people talking, and you can come on and talk about whatever you want. I thought about the idea just during lockdown, because everyone's experienced, you know, the past year in various ways. It's been very difficult for everyone. And I think the best way sometimes just to get through it is just to have a chat about literally anything. And I think everyone's got a story to tell, and everyone has handled lockdown really, really well without even realizing. And I think the little things you think are little are actually kind of big, because you're doing them in the global pandemic. And yeah, if you want to come on and talk about anything, just give me a shout. You can contact me at Luke_Henry1. My Instagram is LukeHenry98. And yeah, just come on, have a chat. A few games involved. It can be random. It can be stupid. It literally can be whatever you want. It's your podcast.
Sounds brilliant, mate. I don't know a format like that. So I look forward to taking part if you give me a chance.
That'd be great. Mate, I look forward to it. 100%.
Awesome. Luke, I've just got one last question, mate.
Go for it.
Two strikers in their primes. You can only pick one. Prime Lewandowski, Prime Omri. Who's better?
Oh, it's a close one, but there was a number 14 from North London. I don't know. He seems to be some sort of king. He was once, I think, he didn't get the Ballon d'Or, even though he's the best player in the world. Just very slightly, I go with Thierry Henry, but it's minimal. I mean, it's only about...
Which one of them has a statue?
Oh, it's not even the statue I was thinking about. It's more the fact that he's just 228 goals, 75 assists. Just, I don't know. I think he's just the best player that's ever played in the Premier League. I might be wrong, but I don't know. I may be wrong, but I think he's the best player that's ever played in the Prem.
It's always easy to look good in the Farmers League, though, eh, Luke?
Yes.
It's at that point, James sat forward. Luke Henry, thank you so much for chatting with us today. Go check out his podcast. Thanks so much, mate.
No worries, cheers, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.